Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
So you may have heard some of the bits and pieces about a story coming out of New Mexico, north central New Mexico, right near the Colorado border. Think near Taos, people who like to go skiing. Of a compound, I guess would be the best way to describe it, where a bunch of children were found living in, they call them squalid conditions.
Filthy, disgusting conditions. And yeah, you know, the story may have crossed your feed or you may have read some of the headlines a few days ago when this compound was first discovered and raided. You and I both came across the story, Bruce, and over the last couple of days, the story has just gotten so weird.
It's literally one of these like stories, an onion, where you keep peeling layers back, and it finally reached the tipping point for me last night.
Where you and I both.
You got to be kidding me.
So this is what you may know about the compound and the children. Okay. This is the sheriff of that community talking about what they found on this very remote piece of land.
Oh, it's
horrible. Deplicable, disgusting, filthy. These children are basically what you would see on television when you see photographs or pictures of children in third world countries.
11 kids living in these conditions. The sheriff goes on to describe what they were living in.
It's a rickety, small camper trailer that they had dug and buried in the ground with literally a tunnel kind of thing leading to it.
Also, they said that when law enforcement arrived and conducted this search warrant, executed a search warrant and this raid there, they said there were booby traps, trip hazards all the way around, wood with nails upturned, broken glass, open trenches meant to, in some way, shape, or form, stop people from getting there.
So they find these 11 children living in filth. They find five adults. They also find the remains of a small child. Now, that is a critical point to the story because this all came about because it was a four-year-old boy who was kidnapped out of Georgia in December by his dad. Authorities were able to track dad down to this compound. That is why they raided it. There has been no official determination yet, but they are speculating that those remains are that of the young boy. Mm-hmm. So this is what all we've known. It's disgusting. It's unusual. But then here's what changed.
Yeah.
It really turned the story on its head last night.
The 11 kids are in foster care now, and a foster parent of one of them has told investigators that Siraj Ibn Wahaj had trained the children in the use of an assault rifle in preparation for future school shootings. Meanwhile, forensics experts are working to confirm the identity of a body found at the site. It's thought to be the four-year-old son of Siraj Ibn Wahaj.
Yeah. Okay. Let's not gloss over the school shooting part. There was a shooting range, a makeshift shooting range on this compound, and that one of the boys, who later ended up in foster care, apparently a foster family, told them, I say boys, it's a child. I don't know if it's a male or female. That they were being trained to use a rifle, and they were told, and or the scenarios they were going through were that they would use that in a school shooting.
Prosecutors in these court documents are saying that yes, the kids were taught as to how to commit school shootings.
Wow.
Now, the sheriff there is saying the adults at the compound were considered extremists of the Muslim belief. He did not elaborate, saying that that's part of this investigation. But when they got there, they found that they were heavily armed with an AR-15, semi-automatic rifle, five 30-round magazines, four handguns.
Yeah, and there appears to be some sort of a family link. I have to go back to the World Trade Center bombing in 1993.
Okay, yeah. See, now we're seeing how these layers of the onion keep getting peeled away, and the story's so strange.
This was the first attack. Remember, there was an explosion in the parking garage area underneath the World Trade Center. All the smoke, you know, people were injured. The World Trade Center survived that attack, and that there was a link to I don't know how to, his name, I don't even remember. They call him the blind sheikh. And he was, you know, went to court and literally blind, and he was somewhere the, kind of the mastermind behind it. Well, they say there's a familial link between the blind sheikh and these, at least one of the adults or the, one of the couples at this compound, which would mean direct links to Muslim extremist groups.
So to connect all those dots for folks, again, going back to December in Georgia, 4-year-old boy is kidnapped by his dad. That dad, that guy that led them to this compound in Colorado, is the son of that controversial Brooklyn imam.
Yeah.
Who was on the list of people who may have been an alleged co-conspirator in the World Trade Center bombing. And this guy's dad testified as a character witness for that guy, the blind sheikh.
Yeah. He was later convicted. He's a terrorist. I get all that. Now,
there's ties to terrorism in that sense.
To be fair, The dad who testified was never charged. But he did show up as a character witness for a guy who was later charged with terrorism in the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. That doesn't necessarily mean in and of itself that he is a terrorist, but that is a link that when you look at what was going on that compound in New Mexico, it makes you wonder, okay, well, what was the ideology here?
Sure. But also where you're looking at the links to all of this as well. The granddad, I guess you could say, that had the ties to the World Trade Center here, or the dad rather, he runs a mosque in Brooklyn right now that has attracted radical speakers over the last several years. And as you have the sheriff there in New Mexico saying that the compound and the adults at it considered extremists of the Muslim belief. What is going on here? I mean, the idea, I mean, just enough with all the little side stories here. Let's just get back to what is crazy about the court documents that have just been released, that apparently this compound was training 11 children to become school shooters.
Think of it like a sleeper cell, like a training them
and
then sending them into the world and then activating them at some point or having them go and do these things. It sounds like a Steven Seagal movie.
It sounds horrific. Now,
agreed.
Those details that we're getting are coming from one of the kids who have been rescued and are now in foster care. So it has been the foster parent who has brought this information to the authorities that they are still investigating. I mean, they're investigating a lot of stuff right now. So as you see this story, we would encourage you to keep an eye on it and follow it because we'd been watching it for a few days. But you and I both agree that last night, with the evolution of a compound training potential school shooters,
the tie to the original World Trade Center bombing,
you're going, something else is going on here and we got to pay attention to it.
Well, hey, can we give some credit where credit's due to the intelligence community and to law enforcement in New Mexico for acting upon these tips, for doing this due diligence in the background, and for acknowledging, hey, there is something not right about this. The sheriff actually had mentioned, Pamela, before, they'd always thought there was something weird going on, but they never had any probable cause to show up and do anything.
Yeah, they had investigated this compound before because people in the area had complained about even like the shooting range, the small shooting range that had been set up, but they didn't have a reason to go in.
Right.
Then some new information came to light, gave them probable cause, and that's where we are right now.
There you have it. It's another day, another bizarre story coming out of the White House, this one involving a reality TV star recording the President of the United States. What could possibly go wrong?
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
As a person who doesn't spend a lot of time with reality television shows, I will acknowledge what I don't know about Omarosa will fill a large room, Pamela.
That was probably when I was actually watching The Apprentice.
Okay, she was on The Apprentice.
Yeah, yeah, that's how I know of Omarosa. She was the villain. Like, every reality show has to have some sort of villain. And in that season, there was no villain bigger than Omarosa.
When Trump was elected, she then had some sort of unofficial role inside the White House.
No, it was an official role.
It was an official
role. Yeah, she worked within the communications department. She most definitely had an official role.
She had a reason to be inside the White House, without
absolutely.
A doubt.
No, absolutely.
I wasn't alleging that she was just hanging out. So she had a reason to be in there, even if she wasn't named Secretary of Defense. The day is still young, but maybe that's not going to happen for her because she has a new book coming out next week. It's called Unhinged.
Well, you might remember that a couple months ago, she was walked out of the White House, fired. And the whole story started to kind of play out where she tried to storm the castle. Have fun storming the castle!
It's always difficult when the Secret Service frowns on people trying to...
She tried to storm the residence.
Break their way into the White House residence.
Right. This was John Kelly going, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. You're out of here. Fired.
When he showed up, he basically said, we're going to make it more professional and you're out of here because you're a lunatic.
Omarosa tried to go above Kelly, tried to go above the Secret Service, storm the residence of the White House. She got stopped. She got kicked out. Okay. And then she was quick to talk. This was soon after she was let go on Good Morning America. Okay. Take a listen to this. She's kind of telegraphing the punch here a bit.
As the only African-American woman in this White House, as a senior staff and assistant to the president, I have seen things that have made me uncomfortable, that have upset me, that have affected me deeply and emotionally, that has affected my community and my people. And when I can tell my story, it is a profound story that I know the world will want to hear.
She gets kicked out of the White House, goes on Good Morning America, also goes on Celebrity Big Brother.
Becomes haunted by tweets every single day. Like, what is he going to tweet next? Like, it's bad.
Okay, so she talks about the president and the tweets, and it's bad inside the White House.
So
now,
the book is called Unhinged. I think I know who she's referring to. But she claims that she has some backup to some of the stories in the book that she's going to be telling. Backup, as in... she secretly recorded the president.
The Daily Beast now reporting the infamous former Apprentice star and White House aide Omarosa secretly recorded conversations with Trump while at the White House. Conversations she has, according to the report, played for people while pushing her own new tell-all book called, quote, Unhinged.
Okay, so where have we heard this before?
Yeah.
The president's personal attorney, Michael Cohen,
recorded
conversations with candidate Trump, businessman Trump, and apparently President Trump. Omarosa, a reality star in the Oval, recording conversations. Like, who are you surrounding yourself with when everybody feels as though they either need to record the conversations to protect themselves later, or they have such low character that they're recording these conversations in Omarosa's sake in order to further her own career and make some money post White House?
Well, it's not just them. Apparently, it was a thing. I remember that when the Cohen tapes came out, that Trump's previous law firm, a law firm that represented him, said it was law firm policy to always have two lawyers in the room. So it wasn't...
he said, she said.
Right. They had two people on their side, and that they recorded all meetings because Trump would routinely deny what they had just agreed to.
I did not know that. I wonder in that situation, though, was it a, hey, just for our records, we're going to
record
this conversation.
Yeah.
So that everybody knows. With Michael Cohen and with Omarosa, these were all done secretly.
How do you get into the Oval Office? The residents, and secretly record the president
United
States. Like, to me, that there is an issue. Forget whatever he said. By the way, what he said on it won't be shocking. What could he possibly say that would shock
you? No. But I mean, like, those who have reportedly heard the conversations, because Omarosa just seems to be playing them for friends and family willy-nilly, it doesn't appear, and nobody has come out with any bombshell of announcement or cover-up or something that's going to shock you that the president said. I just think that on the surface... the idea that we're getting all these stories of people recording conversations. Let me ask you this, Bruce. Have you ever recorded a conversation secretly with somebody?
I have not.
I
feel like I'm missing out. I feel like I'm doing it wrong.
But I've never done that.
But
I've never secretly recorded somebody.
These people are all doing it because of some belief on their part that they need to have evidence? They need to have audio recording to what? Defend themselves?
You can make that argument with Michael Cohen. Was he recording businessman, candidate, President Trump because he knew that what he was asking to do was illegal? And he wanted leverage over
a card to he could turn in. Yeah.
So, I mean, was he doing it to protect himself? And is that what he's using with attorneys now? Omarosa, she's opportunistic. I mean, this woman is going to do anything to make money, keep her name relevant, and still be in the news. It's no wonder that she did this. But I think you've just got to take a look at who the president is surrounding himself with.
Only the best people, Pamela. He has only the best people.
A reality show villain is the best people.
Well,
yeah.
Just because you disagree with the president doesn't mean you're right. He hires only the best people, surrounds himself with only the best people. You know.
And that's just crazy. I've never recorded anybody. But yet apparently everybody in the White House is just walking around.
Standard operating procedure.
Can you imagine what the data plans would have to be? I guess taxpayers are probably paying for that,
it's all
right?
Government phones. Yeah. Yeah. Apparently that's the norm. Everyone has secret recordings. They will all come out over the next 5 to 10 years. So there is a judge in Texas who is siding with Trump on DACA. Will the debate over DACA make it to the Supreme Court quicker? We'll tell you about that story next.
Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes. KTAR News on 92.3 FM.
There are some legitimate legal constitutional questions when it comes to DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, the policy procedure plan that went into effect via executive order by President Obama when he couldn't get Congress to act on it. Okay. It was an act of frustration, maybe, that it went this way. I remember, you know, at the time talking about I didn't want to have to do this, but, you know, quote unquote, somebody's got to do something. The Trump administration doesn't like it, has tried to get rid of it. There's been three different judges that said you can't get rid of it. You can't just eliminate it. But we now have a judge in Texas who might be siding with the Trump administration.
So you've got a federal judge there in Texas. He heard arguments yesterday on whether DACA should end. Okay. And here's a little bit of what happened.
President Obama created DACA while still in office. But now Texas is spearheading an effort with six other states to end the program, calling it unconstitutional.
Okay, well, we've heard this before. You know, Texas isn't the only one who's gone down that path. But this judge has a history of, opposing DACA.
Judge Hannon has a history of being critical of the program, blocking an expansion of DACA and the creation of a similar program for immigrant parents called DAPA. For now, though, DACA recipients like Rosa Sanchez, whose DACA expires next April, will just have to wait.
You may remember there was actually a Supreme Court case where they ended up 4-4. They only had 8 members at the time, and it left in place this judge's ruling. And it appears that if and when this judge does rule on DACA, he has not set a timeline for it. He just heard all the arguments. It could set us up for that Supreme Court showdown.
Three federal judges have already ordered DACA to remain. But if Judge Andrew Hannon rules in favor of Texas, it could push the case to the high court.
When there are differing opinions among federal courts, it is the role of the Supreme Court to bring about uniformity.
All right, so this could very well make its way to the U.S. Supreme Court, where, frankly, I think is where it should be.
There needs to be some sort of relief.
I don't like that President Obama did this by executive action. I understood why he did it by executive action, because Congress had failed to act for decades. I still don't like the fact that he just, you know, waved it with a pen and made it happen. Right now, we've got a ton of people whose lives, I mean, their lives are in limbo right now. So let's get it before a court. Let's have this out. Let's see what should be the law of the land so that whether DACA remains or whether DACA is struck down, people aren't in this state of limbo.
Yeah. Those arguing in front of this judge did make an argument, which you could certainly say might have a little validity, maybe not with this judge, that if the state of Texas, because that's what they're arguing, specifically the state of Texas is harmed by the DACA program draining state resources. If that is true, why did they wait 6 years to bring the case to the judge? Which is a solid argument. I think you could certainly say if this has been such a disaster since day one, as the state of Texas is arguing, why did it take you 6 years to show up in front of this judge? It appears that both sides have done a fair share of judge shopping, where you go around and look for a judge that you believe to be sympathetic to your side to issue a ruling. But this is what the Supreme Court exists for.
And we know
settle the dispute. Wear the referee's jersey.
And this impacts us here in Arizona. We've got about 25,000 Arizonans who are enrolled in DACA. It's about 4% of all DACA recipients. So they are in this state of limbo. But when it comes to immigration, they're not the only aspect that is in limbo. Talk about the reunification of families. You know how this administration has the zero tolerance policy with separating families down along the border. You had this judge who said you need to reunify these families.
Set a deadline.
We find out that there's still about 500 kids who are in custody who have not been reunified with their parents. This federal judge is not only saying it's unacceptable, this judge is also recommending another move for this administration.
Yeah, the same judge, San Diego-based judge Sabra, has asked instructed the Justice Department that they need to name a point person. There needs to be a problem owner, is what I remember from our business discussions. There needs to be somebody that can be held accountable for this, and it's basically suggesting that we need some sort of a government position, a government czar in charge of making sure these kids are reunified, regardless of where the parents are. And do that a lot quicker than what it's happening.
We've been hearing from other groups out there that they are working hard, private groups or nonprofits, to reunify these families. And this judge is siding with these ACLU lawyers that believe the administration is trying to shirk its responsibilities and pass the work off of reunifying these families to these private groups, despite the fact that if you want to talk about who has the resources to reunify these children with their parents, it's not so much the private nonprofit. No. It would be the government of the United States.
Yeah, and I think that there is... And the mess that this is just continues to show... A complete lack of foresight and a lack of organization when it came to instituting this new policy.
Do you think like this judge seems to have the perception of you break it, you buy it? So while the immigration system has been broken for years, decades,
absolutely.
Okay, the administration made it that much worse.
With that zero tolerance policy.
With that policy. Yeah. And by making it worse, it's now your responsibility.
You have to get it back
to
as bad as it used to be.
Yeah.
Not the new worse.
No, exactly. You got to finish what you started.
You got to get back to as screwed up as it was before. Thank you very much.
Which, isn't it sad that, like, that's what we're...
Yeah.
That's our goal right now? Is just to get it to where as screwed up as it was before.
Agreed.
High goals.
It is not breaking news that Americans are overweight or obese. You've heard those stories, right? But what might be shocking is how quickly it's rising and how quickly the new normals are just being accepted. We'll talk about the stunning rise of obesity in America. Men and women. Oh, no one's getting out of this one. It's coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
So, it's no surprise. Heck, you can just look around. And you probably have, anecdotally, you can make the argument that, we seem to be bigger than we used to be. Yeah. I told the story before about going to Fenway Park in Boston and taking the tour, and they let you sit in the original seats. It's 100 years old. And the original seats, most of us can't even fit between the armrests, and our knees are pinned up against the seat in front of us. That's because Americans aren't as big as we are today.
So I think that we're becoming bigger in that sense, but we're also becoming bigger in our bellies as well.
Oh boy.
So we find out that with the latest CDC numbers, 40% of adults here in the United States and about 20% of kids are obese. Now we look at the average guy is a little over 5'9".
Okay, 5'9".
And weighs 196 pounds.
Let's call it 200.
It's up 15 pounds from about two decades ago.
Okay.
For us ladies, we are on average about 5'4" and weigh 170 pounds. The numbers are going in the wrong direction.
You're going the wrong way.
So why is that happening?
Why?
There are a lot of different reasons why that's happening. And you've got the experts that are saying, like, food environment is a strong predictor.
Food environment.
Food environment. Think about how often you cook at home.
Not very.
Mm-hmm. I cook all the time.
Okay.
And but we do go out. Probably more than we should. And I know we're not alone because most of us are cooking less and eating less at home and eating away from home more and more. Why that's important mm-hmm. is because the portions when you go out much larger.
Yes.
And the average restaurant dish.
Okay.
Is about 1,200 calories. Now, if you're not familiar with how many calories you should be consuming
like
in a day.
Arbitrary numbers, it feels like at times.
Yeah, so
yes.
I'm going to give you perspective. For ladies and guys, you should be eating probably between 2,000 and 2,500 calories a day. So
a day.
Half for you guys and more than half for us ladies of what we're eating in a day could be consumed at lunch.
So that could be a little excessive. Which, if you have a large lunch and just have little bitty small things, then maybe you can get away with it.
But is that really what you're doing?
But that's the problem. I don't know if that's what most people are doing.
Because you go out to lunch, and then what happens when that meeting runs late or you just don't feel like cooking, you go out for dinner, and you see how this starts to add up.
I think what was really amazing is it is difficult to make good decisions.
Preach.
It is difficult to be smart because it strikes me that, especially at restaurants, it's not about making a healthy decision. It's about making the healthier decision, which even the healthy one being still not very good.
You know, one of the problems I run into, I try to bring my lunch every day. I'm probably successful about 80% of the time. The other 20%, you're like, oh, I just got to get something to eat, right? I'm leaving work or I'm going to a meeting or this, that, or the other. And I got to grab something quick.
Okay.
What are my options? What are my options? If I want to remain healthy, what are my options? Now, I know, yeah, you can go get a grilled chicken sandwich at McDonald's right down the road. It tastes like rubber. Yuck. Luckily, close to the radio station now, we've got Salad and Go. Love me Salad and Go.
I've never been to a Salad and Go.
But, I mean, the lines are long and it's pricey.
Okay.
I like it. Don't get me wrong. It's a good
option.
But again,
option. It's another barrier yeah. to how difficult it is to make healthy decisions. And it's no wonder why Americans keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and not just a little bit. And it's growing fast, Pamela.
One of the obstacles we're up against, too, when we look at how often we eat out, go back to the 50s, like when my parents were kids.
Oh.
And you take a look at like the average restaurant meal.
Okay.
You look at French fries. They're about, you got about 2.5 ounces of French fries back in the 50s. Today, you get 6.5 ounces. Back in the 50s, the average hamburger was about 4 ounces. Average burger today, 12 ounces. Back in the 50s, your soda, about 7 ounces. Now, 42.
Yeah, if you look at the meal size back in your parents when they were kids growing up, it's smaller than even what you would call the kids' meal today.
Now it's four times larger. Yeah. Four times. It's no wonder
we are
becoming four times as large.
Yeah. That even making the, quote, good decision by getting the smaller one, it's still a hell of a lot more than we ever used to eat. And our bodies are showing it with triple extra large T-shirts.
It's easy to become obese in America.
It is. Sadly, it's hard to be healthy. It's hard to make smart decisions. Storms knocked out power again last night, and two teens struck by lightning in a park in El Mirage. Thankfully, positive prognosis we're getting on those kids. We'll tell you about last night's storm and some of the damage it did. It's coming up next on Arizona's News Station.